We have the privilege of speaking with Ambassador Dario Long. We spent a very wonderful Passover vacation courtesy of Diamond Club at the Grand Mulier in Puerto Rico and relaxing, and he had a lot of information that he gave to our audience that we're here for Pesach, and we're going to share some of it with you. He's former Deputy Foreign Minister of the State of Israel. He's helping startup companies, a visiting professor at Yeshiva University, and you must visit his website, thetruthaboutisrael.org.il. You know, one of the things that you spoke about during the Passover holiday was the fact that the President of the United States wanted to reset relationship with the Arab world and with Iran, and that's one of the things that's taking place. One of the most interesting revelations that you made was regarding the Muslim Brotherhood and the Egyptian government. So perhaps you'll tell our audience what went on and how did the Muslim Brotherhood end up being for a while the leadership of Egypt?
Yes, I think here there was another confusion, I think, in the strategic thinking in Washington, not really understand what really makes the Arab societies and even the Islamic world. And indeed, in May of 2009, the president came to Cairo. He visited also Turkey and Saudi Arabia in thinking to reset relationship with the Arab and the Muslim world, thinking that he could better relation by opening a daylight with Israel. He skipped Israel very conspicuously on this trip. And the result was that 2 years later that the Arab world goes up in flame. Mubarak is facing some insurgency on the streets. Unlike 2 years before in 2009, when the Ayatollahs fade, the same type of insurgency with the Green Movement in Iran, we see here a big discrepancy and not consistency. The administration was backing off from supporting the demonstrators who wanted democracy in Iran, said it was a domestic issue, and then that gave the leeway to the Ayatollahs to kill and incarcerate all of them and just really stop this movement. On the other hand, when it started in Cairo, they pretty much gave the demonstrators a big support and left Mubarak to be deposed, even though he was a major stabilizer force. He is not a Democrat. He is not a Jeffersonian leader. But the confusion here was that in the Middle East, unfortunately, in the Arab world, there, the alternative or the choice is not between Jeffersonian democracy or military government. Certainly not in Egypt. The choice is stability or terror regime. And here again, with siding with the Muslim Brotherhood and actually elevating the Muslim Brotherhood to become the government of Egypt, Morsi, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, when he became president with the assistance and help of the United States, the first thing he did when he came into office was actually to thaw relation or to reestablish relations with the nemesis of the United States in the region, which is Iran, and he called the Ahmadinejad.
But how did he get to that, be elected the president of Egypt? Wasn't there pressure put by the United States to the council in Egypt to make sure that the Muslim Brotherhood won the election? Wasn't there a three-week period where they didn't have a winner?
Absolutely.
Of the elections I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And, you know, we joke about countries like, you know, in the Middle East, that in countries in the Middle East, more important than the voters are the vote counters. And it could go every which way. And it was really a small margin that could go each way. And there was a pressure to have the...
pressure from the United States government to the Egyptians?
Yes, to have the Brotherhood win, with the thinking that the Brotherhood is the solution and not the problem. That they would be less extreme, that they are less extreme than, let's say, ISIS or Al-Qaeda, which is not necessarily the case. And that once they become... once they are the government, they would have to be more responsible to govern. This was quite the opposite. The Muslim Brotherhood took office, again, because of the United States, and...
What you're saying, the United States absolutely pressured the council to make sure the Muslim Brotherhood would become the leadership of Egypt.
Absolutely, and again, and then the Egypt, under the Muslim Brotherhood, realigned itself with Iran and started actually limiting all the rights of Christians, Copts in the United States, rights of women, going back to a most extreme Sharia law, incarcerating journalists, to the extent that the military of Egypt, which has a big role, it's not just the military, because they also are have a big part in the economy and the society in Egypt, until they said no more, and then they took over. And when they took over, doing away with the radical Islam and support of Hamas and terrorism, again, here it took the United States quite a long time to acquiesce and to really support new elections in Egypt. And until now, Sisi, which is the new president of Egypt, does not trust the United States. Saudi Arabia does not trust the United States. When the Saudis were also facing almost a coup in Bahrain and from Bahrain with the help of Iran, again, the U.S. was trying to limit the Saudis. So it's like there is here a total reverse of the strategy, where the United States is placating its enemies and restricting its friends. This is not sustainable. We see the results so far. We see the results in Syria. We see the results in Iraq. We see the results in Yemen and Libya. I hope that there will be there's still time to be some to have some reckoning in Washington and to change course.
Ambassador Nayalon, I'm listening to what you're saying, and a lot of this information has not been public, especially how the United States helped ensure the Muslim Brotherhood become the leadership of Egypt. I don't know why it hasn't gotten out. Has Israel done a better job of doing a better job at Hasbara public relations, or is it still the same? I remember speaking to an Israeli general years ago, and he said, if it's a question of buying a tank or a Hasbara campaign, he said to me, Zev, the tank will always win. Has that mentality changed? I think it's changed somewhat, but it changed drastically.
It has changed somewhat, but not drastically. And today the question is not tank or Hasbara. It would be Iron Dome or Hasbara. So again, you see what is the dilemma. Unfortunately, the government of Israel, and this is historically, cannot really defend itself with public advocacy, with Hasbara. First of all, I believe, as we mentioned, not enough funds. I think the bureaucracy also is not adept and...
But you corrected, for example, there was a picture recently where the photo was cropped in the New York Times, which made Israel look bad, and you went back and you got the real photo, which showed that it was about a young baby that they were putting into the Israelis supposedly putting in prison. But you look at the real picture, it was they were escorting the family right to safety.
Absolutely. I realized when I left government is that everybody can help Israeli Hasbara and image. You don't have to be a public official. On the contrary, there's much more authority and more credibility if you are not even part of the government. And the government needs to have help from NGOs like the Truth About Israel, like many other organizations that they are. The more, the better. We need to create here a critical mass, especially in the social media. First of all, to deflect all the lies that the Palestinian and their collaborators put there, and also to put the right face of Israel, the only true democracy in the Middle East, a Western civilization country, which really defends not just the values and the ways of life, but also the interest of Europe and as well as the United States. There is not understanding. We have to work very hard. It's not a quick fix, but we can do it. Slowly but surely we can do it, and certainly everyone can help.
You mentioned Europe, and during your talks, you also brought out the fact that if you look at the least favorite companies or the countries that have the worst ratings in Europe, where does Israel stand?
Well, this is appalling that we have pretty much lost to Europe in terms of PR.
There was a poll that came out recently that showed one.
Yes, a poll recently showed that Israel came ranked fourth from the bottom. Least favorite countries, the only three behind us were North Korea, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. Even Iran rated better than us in Europe, which is a result of a campaign, dedicated discipline campaign against us for the last 30 years. And we have not been there, and this is the result. Now it will be very, very difficult to correct it. This is why I'm very concerned about what's happening in the United States, because once the Palestinians have Europe in their pocket, they are now redoubling efforts here in the United States, trying to really break, this natural alliance between the United States and Israel, which is also gaining a lot of popular support here. So when I see these few incidents, but incidents, whether it's the Soda Stream or the Episcopalian Church trying to divest, or the American Studies Association, these are few and far between, but we must connect the dots. These are not happening just out of their own volition. There is somebody who's pushing them to do that. And if we are not stopping it now, if not fighting it now, whatever is now on the fringes will become mainstream. And it will not take 30 years as it did in Europe. It will take much less because of technology, because of social media and the new news cycles, which are much faster.
So how do we deal with it? Well, you also have the Arabs pushing and their supporters pushing, you know, BDS. But you also have Jewish supporters saying BDS and let's punish Israel, and you find radical groups. There's been a controversy in New York with which groups that may have a connection to BDS. Should they march in the Israeli Day Prayer? We had on the head of UJ Federation who said the State of Israel said not to ban any groups because at least have one day of unity. I'd like to get your thought about that.
Well, I think this is incomprehensible that you have Jewish groups who are boycotting Israel or calling to boycott Israel and actually undermine the security and the welfare of the Jews living in Israel, and I would say also worldwide, because there is a tie together. If, God forbid, Israel's security or well-being is compromised, so does Jews all over the world. So I do accept pluralism. I respect any criticism. You know, I don't think there is anybody who criticizes the Israeli government more than the Israelis themselves,
right,
and the press, which is fine. But when there is a pressure from the outside, I think it's not only unfair, it's illogical, especially when it comes from Jewish groups. I don't see any Palestinian groups criticizing their own. On the contrary, they speak with one voice.
You don't see a Palestinian J Street, right?
You don't see any, you don't see any demonstrations, you don't see any human rights, even though they kill themselves more than anyone else. But you don't see any human rights, civil rights movements, and all that. And I think there is a lot of hypocrisy here.
But with that New Israel Fund, there's been controversy. I know in Israel they've been, I guess, a mixed bag, but here they're connected, I think, with the Israeli Day Parade as far as marching. There's been a whole controversy in New York. According to Eric Goldstein, the head of UJ Federation, the Israeli government says they should make any controversy here. They should have one day of unity, even though that they're controversial. Mm-hmm. So is that a correct decision from the Israeli government? Should they be banned, not banned from the Israeli Day Parade? Should we just save the fight for another day? Should we have a day of unity, or should we just take a stand?
I think we must remember that our real enemies are Islamic radical terrorism, the Ayatollahs of Iran, Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda. The New Israel Fund is not the enemy. I mean, they may be naive, they may work for some other interest, I don't know. But I think we should not really devote too much energy to do that. We have bigger fish to fry. I also was contemplating, and I was approached to really work to actually expel New Israel Fund from the parade, and I gave a big thought about it. I also met with Eric Goldstein, and I think Eric is doing a great job as the president of the federation, and I think his approach is right. It should be all-inclusive, even though there are machloket, even though there are some dissensions, but certainly we should not hurt ourselves. You know, you do not cut your nose to spite your face. I think that the parade is a show of unity, support of Israel from left to right, from Orthodox to Reform, all of us. And I think this should be the approach. But at the same time, I think we should put them on the spot. And if the New Israel Fund or J Street or whoever calls for divestment from Israel, that should be a red line not to be crossed. I think also there is, Zev, I will tell you something which I feel very strongly about, and that is there is a lot of hypocrisy here by some rich American Jews on the left that in order to what they think, cleaning their own conscience or being doing tikkun olam or being the most advocates for equality, you know, they're doing it not here in Israel. And they are willing to throw us under the bus and putting Israel on the spot as if we are the violators of human rights, which is nonsense, because human rights in areas of conflict is a discipline that have not been explored yet. So to apply human rights that the Scandinavians keep in an areas of conflict and terrorism is just unreal. It's unrealistic. It's wrong. So I hope there will be also a second thoughts by all those Jews who call for divest from Israel.
Ambassador Daniel, I want to thank you, and I know you, one of your groups that you're working with, you're pushing is the truth about Israel.org.il. Tell us what you're doing with it so people should be involved and active and be warriors for Israel.
Thank you, Zev. What we're trying to do is really level the playing fields, and we're trying to be unlike, you know, the Israeli advocacy has never been proactive and has never been on message, so we are going back to the message that the Jewish people belong in the land of Israel. The land of Israel belongs to the Jewish people. We are apolitical. It doesn't mean that there will not be a compromise in the future, absolutely, but we have to understand that we shouldn't be apologetic about our own rights. Everybody talks about justice to the Palestinians, Palestinian rights. There are also Jewish rights. So we come up with the core issues, like the truth about the territory, the truth about refugees and everything else in a proactive way. We do it through short video clips that go into the YouTube and Facebook. Millions have watched it. We will keep doing it. We also give some, we do some series now about archaeology alive to show, again, the rich Jewish culture and history of 4,000 years in our land. And we believe that by permeating the web, creating a critical mass at the end of the day, you know, more and more people will see our side and not just the Palestinian.
Ambassador Daniel Aiello, thank you for joining with us, for sharing some, I think, insights of what's really going on behind the scenes. It was, again, a pleasure to spend the Passover holiday with you and your family in Puerto Rico, Diamond Club. Fantastic Pesach vacation. We look forward to having you back again very, very soon, and we always enjoy our discussions, our dialogues.
Thank you. Thank you, Zev, and best of luck to all of us. Am Israel Chai.
Amen. And we're going to be right back. Don't go away. Stay tuned.